Welcome to the Nordic Africa podcast. I am Heba Habib, Communications Officer at the Nordic Africa Institute. This podcast is a series of conversations that we have with our researchers and guests about issues concerning the continent. Beside me is my colleague, Henrik Alfredsson, who will now introduce this episode.
Recently, French President Macron came back from a tour to Africa, where he visited Gabon, Angola, and the two Congos. Just ahead of his visit, he presented the outlines of France's new strategy for Africa. The new strategy should be seen against a backdrop where anti-French sentiment has been dominating in some of the former countries where France has withdrawn a lot of its military presence. With us here to discuss Macron's new Africa strategy are Cristiano Lanzano, senior researcher at the Nordic Africa Institute. Welcome.
Thank you.
Papa Sau, also senior researcher at the Nordic Africa Institute. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Marie de Rido, researcher at the Forum for Africa Studies at Uppsala University in Sweden. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, welcome everyone. So, our first question is, we start very heavy. At the press conference where Macron presented his new Africa strategy, he said that France must demonstrate profound humility towards Africa. How should we interpret this?
Humility in the mouth of Macron was rather surprising, because Macron is not really acknowledged for his humility and he's more acknowledged for his arrogance, I would say. But what was interesting is that he tried to mark a new start in his politics regarding Africa, and also try to maybe push further what he said in Ouagadougou in his first speech, and try to go further and push a little bit further this idea of soft power and acknowledge a part of the past and the colonial legacy of France. When we are regarding the context, especially in West Africa, this idea of humility is really too late regarding the conflict and also the French intervention in the Sahelian region.
There is a sort of ritual aspect in French presidents trying to come to terms with the colonial past. At least all the last few presidents tried to do that through speeches and sometimes were less successful, as Sarkozy with his infamous speech in Dakar. Sometimes they sounded more convincing or innovative as Macron during his first term. But certainly what was not expected by Macron was the evolution of the security situation in West Africa that actually played the biggest role in alienating many sectors of the public opinion on the continent from the idea of French influence.
Well, I think if somebody called for humility, he must avoid provocations. It is what we've seen through the Macron discourses, speeches. I mean, when he traveled to Africa, like what happened in Burkina Faso, then what the speech he gave in front of the president of Congo. Those kind of speeches, they do not match well if you want to build a diplomatic relation. I think if you call for a deeper humility, then you have to have a way to talk to the audience. That is what is maybe reminding for Macron in his tour in Africa. That I think for humility, you have to go beyond this, the way you talk to audience, and then you have to have a kind of equal relationship with people and not talking like a leader in front of, or like a master in front of some students, of African students, yeah.
I was actually curious about, you mentioned the Ouagadougou speech, which could be seen then as a backdrop to this, I mean, the very policy-shaping speech that he made. Could you elaborate a bit more on this Ouagadougou speech and how this speech counters that kind of?
So in Ouagadougou, he really stressed the generational shift, you know, and the fact that there was a lot of young people on the African continent, and that those people doesn't really need to have this colonial legacy in this area of France-Afrique, and that they will be the, at least in his speech, that they will take in hand the future, and especially when we are looking at Ouagadougou, it was really just after the revolution and the shift. So that was really symbolic. And now I think he went a step further, recalling those ideas. But yes, as my colleague said, that yes, the tone of his speech was not convincing regarding what was happening the last 5 years. So there is a kind of dissonance, I would say, between the speeches and the act, the practices. And also regarding the audience, it's really also important to read or at least to listen to this speech when we are on the African continent. But he was also speaking France, the diaspora, the French people. And so it was really interesting to see that it was not only for African people he was speaking, but also for really the French audience and the diaspora, and also stressing the fact that, yeah, Africa is important for France. And that's also why he also stressed the idea that France has interest, and especially economic interest in Africa.
Thank you very much. So another very hot topic in French, African-French relationships is, of course, migration. France has ever since the colonial era been a major country of destination for many African migrants. In 2015, more than 600,000 nationals of African states were resident in France. And some 3 million French nationals of sub-Saharan African origin live in France as naturalized citizens and or second-generation immigrants. The issue of migration, not least irregular migration from Africa, has been very politicized, both in France and in the European Union. How has Macron's stand on migration affected his Africa politics? Maybe Papa first out?
Yeah, I think, as you said, migration is a very hot topic in France, and because the country also need people for his economies, the recovery of the economy in very highlighted sectors. Like, if you go to Paris, all the drivers they come from Maghreb or from sub-Saharan Africa or others, ex-colonies. I think this is one of the main sectors also is about the demography, which is we have a younger population in Africa. Then you have older population in Europe, and some sectors have jobs to be filled and this kind of things. I think also, yes, the migration issue has been politicized because it is kind of, they are looking for goats. Like if you take the politics of all these leaders that went to the election, presidential elections, so the main topic was on migration. But I think Macron, she knows well that also, France needs this kind of immigration to build the economy, and then to try to see how this cannot be achieved for the economy. Yeah, but yes, I think for the long time, the idea was not to take irregular migration, but to take what they call the migrants living in France, having papers and working in the economy. Yeah.
I also think it's interesting to note that in the EU general restrictive stance on international migration these days, Macron does not necessarily look like the more restrictive policymaker, and certainly he does not have the same reputation as some of his predecessors, again like Sarkozy had, in terms of turning a radical shift in the immigration policies of the country and proning for immigration choisie, so sort of selected immigration. But of course France also shares in a way the contradictions and the attitudes of its neighbors and of all the other European countries, and there is certainly a persistent problem in finding humane and sustainable way to deal with migration flow. And the first obstacle is probably the way in which the question of migration is articulated with voters in European contexts rather than really in bilateral and multilateral relations with the African continent, I'd say.
So, on to more tricky questions. We're not sparing Mr. Macron. One of the key messages in Macron's new Africa policy is that France will reduce its military presence on the African continent. This is not a new strategy. Already last year, France formally ended Operation Barkhane, withdrawing its 3,000 strong force in the Sahel. Macron said that France will end its practice of hosting regular military bases in Africa and instead increase its efforts to provide training and equipment. At the same time, he warns that the Russian mercenary Wagner Group, which he describes as the life insurance of failing regimes in Africa, will attempt to gain ground. How will France's reduced military presence affect France-Africa relationships, and how will it be met by Russia and other geopolitical actors in the region? Marie?
Okay, so thank you for this really tricky issue.
Neither sparing you, Macron, or Macron.
So maybe first it's important that through this politics, the Macron politics, this idea that, yeah, maybe it was not explicit, but Macron has to acknowledge the failure of his military intervention in the Sahelian region. So it was not directly expressed in the speech, but the way they have decided to focus on partnership in, and also to transform military bases in teaching and learning center, or at least they have declared the intention to do that. It's interesting to see that he wants to increase this idea of French power and reduce military presence on the African continent. And I think that will change, maybe that will change the French-African relation in the way that France will not interfere directly in military intervention, at least officially. But on the other side, if they are still providing training and logistic and also equipment support, they will still push the French approach of conflict, the French approach of security, the French approach of intervention in contexts like the Sahelian region. And so that remained problematic, according to me, because we also saw that French approach didn't work in the Sahelian region. And another thing that we have to keep in our mind is that, okay, he said that he will reduce the French presence on the African continent, but on the other side, because of the Ukrainian war, he will try to enhance military power and also became a key player, or at least reinforce his position as a key player in military intervention in Europe and also in the European military strategy. When we are talking about the Takuba force, for instance, which is the military intervention in the Sahelian region, the French approach is really present in the way Takuba force is organizing itself in the Sahelian region. So even if he said that France will reduce its presence on the African continent with the European military strategy, I think he will not completely escape, or he will not completely stop the French presence.
Yes, I think maybe the question we should ask is why those failing states? What is the background of all this process that led to the failure of those states? And then another question could be, why the focus on Wagner? Because Wagner is filling the niches that are left by France, in the conflict. And as my colleague said, also, I think France is not moving from the Sahel, because what we have seen is when they were kicked off from Mali, they go to the next country, which is Niger. So I don't think this policy of releasing is very strong as they meant in the diplomacy.
Yeah, and for instance, they will not transform all the military bases. For instance, Djibouti will remain, untouched. Probably the same for Chad, which is at the center of the Sahelian region. So probably it will be Senegal who will be mainly concerned by this new, but I'm not sure that it will really change a lot on the field. Regarding especially, European intervention and presence on the African continent.
Just a quick follow-up. Do you think that means there'll be more sort of unofficial interventions in Africa?
Macron has expressly said that he will reinforce intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, so I think it will be, it will be intelligence and soft power. That mm-hmm. will be probably mainly the new way Macron thinks will push his strategy.
Will continue his policy. Yeah. Yes. So it's all optics in a sense. Okay, and over to you, Henrik.
So the CFA franc is a currency used by 8 West African countries, comprising over 100 million inhabitants. And there has been some debate over whether this West African franc serves as a way for France to keep influence in the region. In what way is the CFA monetary union affecting the relationships between France and West Africa? And how do you think this will develop in the future? Maybe Cristiano first out?
Yes, well, it is both a long-standing and a new debate, if you will, because already 20 years ago when I started doing fieldwork in West Africa, for example, I remember that the memory of the forced devaluation of the franc CFA happened during the 90s was still very alive and symbolized in a way the powerlessness of African politicians and African citizens in defining one's own economic and monetary policy independently from France. But it's true that in the last 10 years, I would say, this debate has become more radicalized and polarized, with both economists and scholars questioning the validity of the Franc CFA and debating about its advantages. For example, those who defend it tell that it has given stability to the zone and it has encouraged investments from abroad. But those who criticize it also note that it deprives the African government of an instrument of policy of re-evaluating and devaluating the currency. And also it lumps together economies that have very different structural situations and so might suffer from this common economic zone, a little bit on the lines of the criticism against the euro. And then on the other side, you also have a lot of activists demonstrating against the currency, because beyond the economic impact, there is a symbolic element of continuity with the colonial era, of a fixed parity with the French currency, and nowadays the euro, and with some, you know, representatives of European and French central banks having statues as observers in the governing bodies of the currency. So I think for activists and social movements, that is the most enraging aspect and that stimulates claims and protests. And I think that African governments have tried to cope with this emerging discontent by proposing some reforms of rethinking the governance of the currency. I don't see any immediate radical change in line, but it is certainly a question that will overall lay on the shoulders of African governments to keep a system while ensuring a breach with the colonial past or radically reforming the economic and monetary system in the area.
Yeah, I think to respond to your question, I think in what way is a self-affecting relationship? I think by creating frustration among the young elites. As Cristiano said, we have seen all these activists like Kemi Seba, who is well known, Natalie Yamb, she's also a Cameroonian Swiss activist, and then we have all this movement in Senegal, France Dégage. So those kind of movements, they are resisting to the Franc CFA. And I think if really France want to set up a dialogue, they have to talk with those people. Even if the head of states are not following those activists, I think one day or later they will return back and talk to those people, because they are trying to, if I can say, colonize the mindset of the people, the young people, and they have little followers. The social networks are very important for those people, and they are very conscious that, the Franc CFA politics will come to an end. I think this is also an important aspect to take into account.
Interesting. France is one of the African continent's main economic partners and its number two trading partner in Europe. How important are trade interests in Macron's Africa strategy, and how do you think French-African trade relationships will develop in the future?
Well, I think in the media, the new strategy by Macron has largely been acknowledged as a sort of shift back or forward to business in a way. And so in a way to abandon the sort of moral stance of supposed moral role and humanitarian role that France would have in the continent, back to a country that has his legitimate or less legitimate economic interests and bilateral economic relations with different African countries. And that's what Macron also wants to defend and to bring forward. And we have a lot of companies, of mining investments in several African countries that are still very important for French capitalism and for French business scene. And so for sure it will continue to dominate the political concerns of the French government with relation to Africa.
I think the military positions that are set up in Africa, there is rumors that they are protecting the interest of the trade of France. And the past years we have seen the settlements of several French companies like Auchan, Carrefour, if you go to Dakar, or one of the biggest Carrefour is in Cameroon, Central Africa. So I think those interests also are very important. And sometimes rumors said they are correlated with the military positions, because they can also defend this kind of interest. And this is also, something that also a kind of strategy that France wanted to develop. I remember back to time when they have these protests in Dakar, they were attacking the Auchan, the young people, because they are the interests of France. And obviously, I'm sure they had also diplomatic discussion between the two countries to see how to avoid those kind of things when they have protests.
About trade, it's also important to remember that for a long time, France has also decided that they will be the priority partners for trade and business in Africa, and which is, that's not at all the case for the moment, because you have also Chinese interest. You have also, for instance, Germany is the first partner with Africa, the first partner with African countries for exportation, if I'm not mistaken. And so that's also interesting to see that France is losing, you know, the run maybe on the African continent, and has to struggle more than ever, you know, to remain an economic partner of African countries and African economic interest. And also because maybe during the France-Afrique area, there were a lot of deals that were at the disadvantage of African economic partners, and now it's not possible anymore. So that's also an important point, according to me. Another thing is that Macron went in Gabon to talk about environment and climate change, but Gabon is at the heart of the France-Afrique. And
oil production.
And oil production, yeah. The same for him. There is a lot of interest in the petroleum industry. So he's there to talk about agriculture, but, you know, France and TotalEnergy has a lot of interest, economic interest in those countries. So that's also interesting to see how he will use soft power, you know, talking about culture, agriculture, climate change, you know, maybe green energy, I don't know. But there are really other core interests in those countries.
The repatriation of stolen cultural heritage objects, stolen during the colonial era, has long been on Macron's agenda. Already in November 2017, at the dawn of his first term, he made a commitment in a speech at the University of Ouagadougou, the Ouagadougou speech that we mentioned already. He said, within 5 years, the conditions will be met for temporary or definitive restitution of African heritage to Africa. This he pledged, taking the museum world by surprise. But what has happened since, and how important is this issue for French-African relationships? Maybe Cristiano first?
Yes, this is maybe the time where I become more positive. At least,
finally.
a little bit. But I'd say that indeed that speech in that aspect was received as quite innovative. And the debate about the restitution of objects and the decolonization of museum collections had, of course, been going on for quite a while. But it was one of the first times a political leader so high in the hierarchy would take it up and say something about it. And I think this was not so well received by some of Macron's colleagues that said to themselves, he has opened a Pandora's box now. And to his credit, he did appoint the following year in 2018 two scholars, Bénédicte Savoie and Felwine Sarr, who wrote this report, this extended report on methods and implications of a partial restitution of museum collections to African countries, which was widely discussed. It was also criticized, of course, by museum curators, but it was relatively courageous and radical in its proposals. And if we look at the numbers today, the restitutions that actually happened remain quite limited. There have been few dozens of objects given back to Benin, for example, where an exhibition has been organized around 26 artifacts, and even less to some other countries. So it is going quite slowly, also because there is a general principle, and then there are the technicalities, there are the bilateral negotiations, and there is the research that is needed behind every object to understand the modalities of its acquisitions and also to identify where it should be given back, for example. So there's a lot of practical complexities related to this process, but at least that speech and that initiative had the merit to open the debate and bring it up to the upper spheres of international politics. And I think that even when activists who are more radical than Macron obviously criticize the slowness of the process or the, you know, mild character of these policies, they still recognize that this was a partial game changer in the debate.
Well, I think Cristiano, he resumed it very well. And what I have to add is, for this aspect, cultural aspect, I think Macron was surrounded by very great intellectuals. I mean, Achille Mbembe, those guys who's maybe who give him advice to do those kind of things. And I think this is a great thing for the young generation and the people who doesn't, who didn't know those stolen things, and that they are also returning back to Africa. I think this is a very high aspect of the cultural element that we can also have at home, and this is important. Like, one thing what I want to add in the artifact of Benin, like all those stolen artifacts, they were kind of decoration in the throne's palace of the kings. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have, I was reading that they didn't have any significance if you bring them to Europe, because, yes, you know, I think Cristiano know well about what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting side debate about the role of museums and the Eurocentric notions of museums, and the fact that some objects acquired some sort of status of art precisely because they were brought from one society to a very different societies and then put under an exhibition. And then the problems remains of how to give them back and how to exhibit them or attribute them back another role. And some scholars in the African continent are actually contesting the very idea of museum as a significant space for African consumers of art, for example. So it's not as linear as it might seem. Let's just give back everything to African museums. But it brings up into questions more complex notions of what is art and what is an object and what's the use of an artistic exhibition to different publics.
Maybe this is a good way to lead into our next question, which is about cultural diplomacy. And so, as we've discussed throughout this conversation, a French new strategy seems to pivot on, you know, away from France-Afrique and more to cultural diplomacy. And this can... Evidence of this, for example, is the Africa-France summit, which was organized last year in Montpellier, which is unlike other Africa-France summits and was less geared towards politicians and more geared towards the youth, and was organized by Achille Mbembe. So again, there has been critique that this is an extension of old policies from the 1950s, and ultimately nothing has changed. Do you think that's the case?
What is interesting is the way they call it Africa-France. You know, that was a summit that it was another tactic of Macron, to coax or to flatter the young generation. I think this is because this is very strategic for him, not to talk to leaders, but to talk to younger generation. Those people, they were well chosen, selected, because they have voice in the continent. Well, if this is a form of bringing more humility to the political diplomacy, I think that is good. But if this is a way also to brainwash people, I think that is not a good thing. So that is my takeaway from this summit.
To also respond partly to the last part of your question, I am always a bit tempted to go for the explanation that this is just old stuff. Right? This might be new stuff, if not necessarily more positive or more beneficial, but I think that sometimes the category of neocolonialism, which is of course instrumental for the mobilization of people, may risk to obscure that there are constant changes and redefinitions in the relations between former colonial powers and independent countries. And I think that, it appears clearly from the fact that, you know, the colonial past has been there for a long time, and it's the way a memory around it and used for political mobilization that has changed through time. So I think that in the very last years, new forms of anti-imperialism and anti-colonialism have been activated or reactivated as a consequence of very contemporary dynamics or very contemporary processes in the Sahel or in other regions of the continent. And I think we need to interpret and understand both sides, the mobilization and the discontent from the African side, but also the adaptive strategies and reactions from French and European political elites, contextualizing them in contemporary history. So I'd say we need to keep an eye on what's going on the military, economic and international level to understand really these changes or continuities, I think.
Yes, and maybe what we also need to acknowledge is that 5 years or maybe even 10 years is really a short period of time to dismantle all the coloniality of power that Christiana just explained. And so that's also one thing that we should keep in mind. It's that, yeah, it's really, he doesn't have a magic wand. He cannot change everything like this. And so it's also, yeah, this constant adaptive strategies, as you said, and also how to negotiate balance power, but yeah, regarding a really fast changing context.
Okay, thank you very much. So we could, of course, talk a lot more about this topic of African-French relationships and Macron's new Africa strategy, but unfortunately, our time is up. So thank you very much, Cristiano, Marie, and Papa for participating. And to our listeners, thank you for listening. And please also tune into our website where you can find a reading list to go with this episode and also listen to our previous episodes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.